A galaxy of stars swirls behind two sparking electrodes powering a spinning disc between them. Distant Corners Entertainment. Superimposed letters against a black background expand to form XYZ Films. Distant Corners Entertainment presents, in association with XYZ Films. Executive producers, Roger Coleman, Blue Elephant Partners, James Avery. Executive producers, Andrew Barrer and Gabe Ferrari. Executive producers, Nate Bulletin, Nick Spicer. Produced by Aram Terzakian, Kyle Frank. Produced by Tim Connors, Adam Egypt Mortimer. Produced by John Hedgman. Written and directed by Anthony Scott Burns, Nicholas McCarthy, Adam Egypt Mortimer, Gary Shore, Kevin Smith, Sarah Adina Smith, Scott Stewart, Kevin Kolsch, and Dennis Widmeyer. A dark-colored card quartered by lines coming out of a skull with an intricately bordered circle rises from a black background. In each quarter, clockwise, is a heart, a clover leaf, an Easter egg, and mistletoe. The card flips away to reveal a title in raised letters against black. Holidays. Fade to black. In a locker room, a girl sits cross-legged on a bench with her hair falling over her face. She carves into the wood with a box cutter. Carved on the bench is the word COACH with a heart around it. Later, the girl in a red swimsuit with her hair tucked into a matching cap walks up to the base of a ladder leading to a diving board. She looks up, wide-eyed. A man and a group of girls stand close by.
All right, up you go, Max!
Yeah! Up you go, MaxiPad!
Knock it off, Heidi.
Heidi, also in red bathing suit and cap, rolls her eyes and smirks. Max glances at them and then back up the ladder. She slowly begins to climb, one foot leading the other. Max keeps her gaze focused on the top of the ladder and continues to climb until she reaches the high dive board. She walks across the board to the edge and peers down.
Woo! Here we go, Max! Bring me that brick! Come on now!
The dark shape of a brick is visible at the bottom of the pool.
MaxiPad! 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 MaxiPad!
The coach glares at the girls and shakes his head. Max's expression is tense as she glances at the smirking faces of the girls.
MaxiPad! MaxiPad!
She looks back at the brick in the water and her eyes widen, then close. She imagines warm light glowing behind the coach as he stands shirtless with his hands on his hips. He squints as he looks off into the distance, then smiles wide.
You know what you have to do, Maxine.
She opens her eyes and whips around in time to see Heidi behind her. Heidi pushes her and, in slow motion, she falls off the diving board, arms flailing. Heidi covers her mouth and points down at Max, while the coach looks at the water with a concerned frown. Coach's frown deepens, and he starts to strip off his jacket. Underwater, Max imagines the water in a deep purple hue as he dives into the pool. Max is suspended in the water, her arms floating in front of her as Coach swims his way towards her. Now, a dripping coach lays Max down at the edge of the pool. He tilts his face to listen for Max's breathing while in the background, Heidi dives into the pool. He watches her face with a furrowed brow, and she slowly opens her eyes. Max imagines sunlight shining around them. She grins, and he smiles back. The light dims, and she turns her head sharply.
like someone wants a kiss.
He gets to his feet, surrounded by the girls. He casts a last look at Max, then walks away, rubbing a hand over the left side of his chest. Later, Max sits in the locker room. Heidi and the girls enter.
Well? Well, what?
He loves me.
He didn't give you detention?
Detention? Please, girl. How you gonna give me detention when you know we go sit this life on Friday?
Huh? Coach opens a pill bottle in his office.
Oh, no, Valentine's is tonight. Why would we go Friday? Well, I can't do Friday. Well, no, you know, the talent show.
He holds a flyer.
No, the talent show that the kids organized for my operation.
Oh, did you really think Mr. Walkwell was trying to kiss your widow wet lips?
Huh? Heidi, her blonde hair in a ponytail, approaches Max and bends toward her. Coach starts to write in a Valentine's card.
You know, it's a nice gesture. You know how much these kids love me. Not like that. No, they look up to me, Cam, all right? And I'd be a real jerk to ditch out on my own fundraiser, don't you think?
You really think he'd go for you over me? Just wait until he sees the twerking routine we came up with for the talent show. Real Nicki Minaj shit.
That's fine. No. You know what? That's great. Yeah, I love you too.
He tosses his phone on his desk and leans down on his hands. His chest heaves and he rubs a hand over it. A letter from the Heart and Lung Foundation starts off, "Dear Mr. Rockwell, we regret to inform you." Coach stares off with a frown, then his gaze is pulled to the side.
What are you doing to get him a new heart? Did you organize a talent show? Are you gonna perform something?
Coach listens in.
I know. Show and tell. First you show everybody your little friend, Mr. Boxcutter. And then just watch as those donations pour in. When you tell them it's the same toy your dear, dead daddy killed himself with.
Max looks up at Heidi through tendrils of wet, dark hair. Her nostrils flare and her lips tighten as she glares. Heidi straightens and backs away a little. Behind her, MaxiPad is graffitied on a locker door.
I gotta meet Rick.
Heidi walks away with Max staring after her and opens up her locker. Coach, mouth tight, walks away. Heidi pulls on her clothes.
You're not gonna go take a shower?
No, I'll take one at home.
She gestures at Max.
I heard this one has rats in it.
She slips her feet into a pair of white flip-flops. Coach looks down at the card he had begun writing that reads, "To T.A." Rows of white and pink hearts cover the inside flap. He frowns, looks away from the card, then picks up his pen. He changes the T to M and writes Maxine and signs it Coach Rockwell. Meanwhile, Max stands under the spray in the shower, one hand holding on to the shower knob. Her shoulders droop and her hair falls down over her face. Coach Rockwell comes out of his office with the card. He walks down the short corridor to the locker room and pauses at the door before entering. He walks past rows of lockers till he gets to where a lone backpack sits on a bench. He stops at the locker with the MaxiPad graffiti. He glances at it, tilting his head, and then looks off to the side. He pauses, then quickly slides the red envelope through the vent in the locker. Coach takes another look off to the side and quickly walks back the way he came. Max walks towards her locker, hunched over with a towel wrapped over her swimsuit. She reaches up and turns the dial to unlock it. The door swings open to reveal the red envelope sitting on top of her sneakers. She stares at it, then her eyes flicker from side to side suspiciously. She reaches in, pulls out the envelope, stares at it for a moment, then opens up the card. As she stares at it, the word love appears above Coach Rockwell. Max smiles widely. She closes the card and hugs it to her chest. Suddenly, the room goes dark, then turns to a red hue that washes over Max's hair and features. She stares off into the distance, a dreamy expression on her face. Later, Heidi sits on a bench with a boy outside a baseball field fence. Max watches them from under the bleachers. The boy hands Heidi a heart-shaped box and moves in close, trying to cup her chin. She moves her face away with a coy smile, then pushes the boy back when he tries to kiss her. A van pulls up in the parking lot behind them, and the boy gets up and leaves. Heidi walks across the field, the box in her hand, and exits through an opening close to the bleachers. She slows and turns to see Max standing at the bleachers, watching her. Heidi looks her up and down, a frown on her face, then turns and keeps walking. Max begins to follow her.
Stop following me, MaxiPad!
She continues walking, then looks over her shoulder.
You're acting really weird today, even for you.
Heidi slows to a stop and Max follows suit.
Well, go ahead.
She gestures for Max to pass her, but Max doesn't move. Eyes wide, Heidi continues walking.
Well, I'm gonna cut through the woods. See you tomorrow. Happy Valentine's Day.
She smiles slightly, then turns and heads toward the forest. Max follows, keeping a distance between her and Heidi. Dried leaves blanket the forest floor. Heidi turns and looks at Max intermittently as she briskly makes her way deeper into the forest.
What are you doing?
She turns, walking backwards for a few steps, then whisks around again. Heidi stops, and Max mirrors her.
You don't even live this way!
The young blonde's pace quickens.
Stop following me!
She starts to run. Her flip-flop gets stuck in the ground, and Heidi falls face-first into a pool of muddy water. Her blonde hair loosened from her ponytail and clothes are covered in brown muck.
Now look what you did!
Heidi slowly turns her head. Suddenly, Max strikes her in the face and, in slow motion, she falls backwards into the water. The brick falls from Max's hand. Blood stains the sides of Heidi's nose, and her chest heaves. Max grabs her by the ankles and pulls her out of the shallow pool. She straddles the fallen girl, positioning Heidi's arms between her body and Max's knees.
I was just kidding.
She looks down at Heidi and slowly undoes the flap over her coat pocket. The girl's lips quiver in fear and blood smears her teeth. Max takes the box cutter out of her pocket and pushes up the blade. Heidi stares up at her in terror. Her eyes widen and Max smiles, then bends over her. The heart-shaped box lies stuck amid branches in the water. Now, Coach sits on a bed.
We're gonna be late!
Well, I thought I had until Friday.
Why would you think that? Valentine's Day is tonight!
He peers through the hallway at his front door. The silhouette of a girl can be seen through the opaque glass panel. He opens the door and finds Max, who is covered in blood. She lifts her hands that are cupped around a human heart. Coach stares at her offering, open-mouthed and repulsed. Max smiles back at him, her eyes glazed and unfocused. Cut to black. A red card with a heart and the words, "Give me your heart," opens. Below a drawing of a human heart are the words, "Happy Valentine's Day." The word "happy" fades away. Written and directed by Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer. Now, misshapen clay figurines sit on a table.
Shamrocks, Irish dancing, parades of green. These are some of the images that come to mind when we think of St. Patrick's Day.
In a classroom, blank-faced grade school students watch a video. The young teacher grades papers. She puts her hand over her mouth. She looks up at a sullen-faced girl, then corrects the words "whores" to "horse."
But who exactly was St. Patrick? And how did he deliver the word of God to Ireland? A land once in the grip of druids, pagans, and devil worshippers. According to legend, Patrick banished all of the snakes from Ireland by casting them into the sea. Although evidence suggests there were no snakes in Ireland during the 5th century, most scholars believe this to be a metaphor. St. Patrick's expulsion of the pagans and mystics. Long may Ireland let slip from memory its paganistic days of old.
In the video, snakes thrash around in the water. The little girl winces. Later, she sits alone on the playground. The teacher walks up to her.
Hey, Grania.
Grania looks up from the fibers she's been braiding.
That's very pretty. Who's it for?
The child rips it apart.
Okay.
The teacher, Liz, frowns.
Look, I know how hard change is. Coming to a new school, not having any friends. But I bet if you were to show us that smile just for a second, it'd make all the difference in the world.
Grania's expression stays sullen.
Do you know what? I have an idea. Would you like to ring the lunch bell?
She holds out an old-fashioned brass handbell. Grania raises her eyebrows disdainfully, then gets up and walks away. Liz watches her with a puzzled smile, then rings the bell herself. She looks around the playground as children stop what they're doing and sprint towards the schoolhouse. Liz's eyes are drawn past the school fence to where a woman lifts a crying child out of a stroller. A smile plays over Liz's face. In slow motion, Grania turns and looks at her teacher standing motionless in the middle of the playground. Seen from above, Liz stands in a snake-like pattern on the playground. In class, a montage of art projects. Liz displays one. The students leave, clutching their art projects. Liz looks down at her desk where a coiled braided snake rests on a piece of paper with the words, "Only your deepest wish can make me smile." She picks up the snake as Grania watches, partially concealed by the door. Later.
Hey, yeah, it's me. Can't chat for long. I'm here waiting for Sam. He's insisted I park away from the school because apparently I'm not cool.
A montage of vegetables being chopped and soup bubbling.
He's like, "Mom, it's not authentic if I smile." Yeah, it's your Holy Communion photo. Not the Dogma 95 movement.
Liz sits alone and eats soup. Now she strenuously works out on a stationary bike.
My doctor actually recommended I get new contact lenses with hope printed on the insides. Apparently, clinical trials suggest it may help the cynical wheel of self-loathing from turning.
Liz examines the snake. A montage of ceramic animals.
Oh, anyway, I can't wait to see this weekend for Paddy's Day. We have fucked up, yeah? Find you a man?
Liz closes her eyes. Later, she wakes up in the backseat of a car dressed in a St. Patrick's Day costume. She picks up a piece of snakeskin, then sits up and looks outside. An aerial view shows Liz's car in the middle of dozens of shopping carts in a coiled pattern in an empty parking lot. Words beside a stuffed crow read, "Day one."
Liz, where are you? I went back to the bar, but there was no sign of you and that Danny Zuko wannabe you were talking to. Call me, think.
A montage of Liz readying herself for school, then pulling into the parking lot.
I'd like you to pick your favorite book, write a page about why you like it, and score the book out of 10. Hand-in date is 2 weeks from today. Okay, everybody, page 38, circles.
Grania sits at her desk and smiles toothily at Liz, who smiles back. The little girl begins to turn the pages of her book without breaking eye contact or her smile. Liz's smile falters. Words over an animal skull, day 13. At a supermarket, Liz stands in front of the butcher's counter. Her mouth is turned down and her expression blank as she stares at a large hunk of meat on display.
Fuck! Hiya, Grania.
She smiles down at the child. What? Grania leans in and places her ear against Liz's abdomen and smiles broadly. Liz pushes her away.
Now, hang on. That's not very appropriate, Grania.
Grania's smile disappears, and she turns and runs up an aisle. Liz frowns, then looks down at the cartoon pineapple printed on her t-shirt. Later, Liz peers at the lines forming on a home pregnancy test stick. At a doctor's office, she paces the waiting room as, nearby, a boy smacks a rope against a wall.
Mrs. Cullen.
She turns with a smile on her face.
You are pregnant.
I fucking knew it! I just can't believe it! Oh, I've waited so long for this.
However, we're not certain with what.
Well, if it's a boy or a girl, that doesn't matter to me.
We'd like to run some further tests.
although...
If the results indicate a false positive, we need to operate immediately and remove...
Her eyes flicker down.
It.
I'm pregnant.
Liz bites her lip.
Did you understand what I said?
It's totally grand, boy, girl, whatever I get, I'm happy. I am so happy.
Were you with somebody recently or some animal of some kind?
Liz squints at the doctor.
Okay, have you ever seen the Hollywood movie Rosemary's Baby?
Yeah.
If you replace baby with a reptile...
She points to Liz's abdomen.
That's what you have. It's like Rosemary's reptile.
Liz's smile changes to slack-jawed shock as she stares at the doctor. Reflected in a child's ornament, Liz looks away and begins to cry. Later, a childishly drawn picture of a person squatting with a snake coming out of their genitals. Fearful faces are drawn around the edges of the sheet. In class, Liz reads a book report, The Story of Prince Lindworm, Brother, Prince, Snake. Love this tale of terror, 10 out of 10. She looks at Grania.
Grania, what is this?
The child stares from under hooded eyes.
Grania, what is this? Grania, what is this?
Liz projectile vomits black tarry liquid all over her desk and Grania's drawing. While the other children scream, Grania smiles broadly and claps. Liz looks around at the room full of panicked children and then at Grania. Her features harden and she gets up and walks towards the child, black goop staining her chin and shirt.
Stop smiling!
The other children stare in shock. Liz starts crying and looks down at her wet hands. She slaps Grania hard across the face, leaving a black handprint against her cheek. Grania resumes smiling. The words day 366 are over a meatless rack of ribs. The plated snake is half destroyed in a blender.
Mom just called. She says you look like a 25-year-old woman from the Middle Ages spliced with a mentally ill circle. I'm booking an appointment with Dublin Zoo. There's no excuses this time, Liz.
Liz, her face pale and hair stringy, hesitantly reaches for a striped baby's onesie hanging on a rack. She takes it off and holds it to her face. She wears a loose dress that is belted under her swollen belly. A clerk approaches.
Hi, can I help you with anything?
She pulls the material tight over her face, completely covering it, and leans her head back.
That's not really...
The woman tries to tug it away.
Really okay.
A couple of customers watch as Liz starts stuffing the cloth into her mouth. She and the woman tug at the onesie with Liz winning and putting the fabric back over her nose.
Take that. I'm sorry, you're gonna have to be...
The clerk finally gets the onesie away from Liz, who glares at her. She storms away, throwing down a stack of clothes on her way to the door. She flips them the finger and leaves. Now she walks down a street.
What the fuck are you thinking, Liz? The zoo just called. They said you never turned up for your appointment. I know you're probably saying to yourself, what if the vets got it wrong? Let me impart some important advice I learned a long time ago, the hard way. Vets don't get things wrong.
In a church, the Virgin Mary stands on a snake.
Giving birth to a snake is not only suicide, it's probably the most wrong-headed thing ever attempted in the field of human endeavor.
Liz stands in a pet shop.
The only thing you have to do to make our family happy is just come home alone.
The words day 396 are over an animal figurine. Liz lies naked in her tub. She stares intently at her cupped hands. Her abdomen has several blue veins radiating from her belly button. A hamster in her hand sniffs the air, and Liz gently strokes it with her thumb, then places it on her belly. She holds on to the tub.
I need you to help me get clean of this, okay?
Her belly bulges and she jerks in the water. A small smile spreads across her face, then quickly changes to a grimace as another contraction occurs. Her head is thrown back by the violent jolt through her body. The water between her legs begins to turn black. She clutches the lip of the tub. Another pulse of her abdomen throws off the hamster, who falls into the water. She shudders and strains, her chin tilted up and her teeth clenched. The water churns and then calms. The hamster swims in the dark water and is snapped up by a newborn snake. Liz's head bobs forward, and she passes out. Now, a man in an animal mask and white garment stands up in a wide lavender field. Behind him, similarly dressed people rise. The men and women begin to stride forward. Meanwhile, Liz lies partially submerged in the dark water of her tub. She sits up. She looks down at the calm water, and then to the side. Grania stands at her bathroom door, her face painted, braids and beads in her hair. Twigs, strips of cloth, and a skull are threaded together and hang from a tree. Draped in a blanket, Liz walks through tall grass holding Grania's hand. She watches the masked people carry a large snake ceremoniously around a tree.
Horrible, isn't it?
A man stands in a black jacket with a white snake on the back.
You can't remember, but you can't forget.
Liz looks at him, then Grania.
Grania.
The girl holds the man's hand.
This is your father?
She looks at the black pompadour on his head.
Danny fucking Zuko.
Our little boy is waiting.
She turns and walks towards the tree.
Look, I know you think she's different, but she's not. She'll run a mile when she claps eyes on him. Just wanted a normal baby. It's not fair. Blah, blah, blah. But just look how quickly she forgets. Don't make me laugh. She's the same as the rest of them.
The white-clad group kneels before Liz, supporting the body of a gigantic snake.
I'm so sorry.
Her chin trembles as she looks at the snake.
I had no idea.
You'd be so damn ugly.
You'd be so beautiful.
She cups the snake's head. It has a small tuft of black hair on his head resembling a pompadour and a mouthful of small, sharp white teeth. It nuzzles her hand. She looks up and spreads her arms, throwing off her blanket. Grania smiles up at her father.
Very good, little one. Very good.
Let's go!
Liz joins the group around the tree.
I bet there's a whole lot of disenchanted folk out there just waiting for a bouncing snake to lighten up their lives. I bet if we tap into that lonely, miserable demographic in a few short years and a bit of luck, we might just hit pre-Patrick numbers.
The group dances around the tree as they carry the snake's body on their shoulders. Liz coddles and plays with her snake son. The screen fades to black, except for a circle showing Liz and the snake. Now, the same montage of children's art projects. They rush out of a classroom. A nun watches them leave and turns and looks over the children's desks. A coiled, braided paper snake sits in the middle of a larger sheet on her desk, and written below it is, "Only your deepest wish can make me smile." She picks it up and examines it, then turns towards the door where Grania, with a small smile, stands partially hidden. A card with the image of St. Patrick reads, "St. Patrick's Day Greetings." It opens. On the inside is a picture of a large snake. "Happy St. Patrick's Day." The word "happy" fades away. Written and directed by Gary Shore. Fade to black. A woman tucks a little girl into bed.
Time to close your eyes and go to sleep. It's a special day tomorrow. Someone's coming tonight. I'll give you a hint. He's furry, and he hops, and you wake up in the morning, and you get...
The girl smiles.
Candy eggs and candy chicks.
Yes, but here's the thing. No kid has ever seen him, because all the kids are supposed to be asleep when it comes. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Close your eyes.
She plants a kiss on the girl's forehead.
Wait. I'm scared.
Why? Are you afraid you're gonna have a bad dream?
The man coming back from the dead.
What man?
Jesus. In church, they said that Easter was about him coming back from being dead.
What about the Easter Bunny?
Is he dead too?
No, the Easter Bunny's different.
Is Jesus real?
He was real.
He was?
Yeah. But he was a good man. And you know what? Yes, he died. But when he came back, that was a good thing. It was a miracle that he came back. He flew up into the stars. And he went back where he came from. And he lives in our hearts now.
She gazes earnestly at the child.
It's kind of like a scary version of E.T.
Yeah, but he wasn't a story. He was real.
The girl considers this.
What about the Easter Bunny?
Well, the Easter Bunny comes on Easter.
But I thought that's when Jesus came back from the dead.
No, that's different.
I don't understand, Mommy.
Oh, honey, just close your eyes and go to sleep. And tomorrow you are going to wake up, and there will be candy chicks and eggs and yummy stuff.
But what if I'm awake when he comes? What if I get up and get a glass of water?
It's okay to get a glass of water.
No, but what if he's here? What if I see him?
Shh. Honey, just go to sleep.
Mommy, how does he get in the house?
Shh. Okay.
She nods sternly.
I'm gonna count to three, and I want those eyes shut.
The girl stares.
All right. One. Two.
The girl squeezes her eyes shut.
Three.
Her mother smiles and leans over her.
You're gonna wake up tomorrow, and it's gonna be exactly like last year.
She gets up and turns out the light.
Mommy?
The woman pauses in the doorway.
Last year, Daddy was here. Will he ever come back?
The woman's features are shrouded in darkness.
Maybe. Go to sleep, baby.
In her bedroom, the woman puts aside her robe and sits down on the edge of her bed. A crucifix stands on the dresser before her. She folds her hands in prayer and closes her eyes. She drags the tips of her toes through the tufted carpet and arches the soles of her feet. She parts her legs, gently strokes her thighs, and lies back on the bed. Now, a flickering shadow ripples across the walls and furniture in the dark living room, then grows still. A leaky kitchen faucet drips into a sink. Glass doors look out onto a patio lined with potted plants. One of the doors slides open, and a football-sized Easter egg rolls into the house. It comes to rest in the middle of the living room. Drops of moisture glide down its mottled black and white surface. It shudders. The girl opens her eyes. She sits up slowly and watches the gap in her door. She steps out of her room and looks down the hallway.
Mommy.
Her eyes flit between her mother's bedroom and the rest of the house. She steps further away from her room and peeks past the foyer. At the sink, she picks up a glass from a rack and fills it with tap water. She gulps down the water. A figure scuttles behind her. She turns around, places the glass on the counter, and eyes the living room with a slight frown. Slowly, she walks out of the kitchen. She stops and looks down. She raises a foot to see a string of slime trailing from her slipper. She continues into the living room, staring at the floor. A little chick waddles around on the carpet. She notices a huddled figure facing a corner of the room. She covers her mouth and backs away behind a wall partition. She peeks around the wall to see the figure squatting with his arms outstretched, clad in a loincloth. His bare back glistens in the moonlight, partially covered in fur. His arm twitches and he wiggles his fingers. Through a small circular wound in his palm, a tiny chick crawls out and hops to the floor. The girl hides again, her features contorted with fear. She creeps away from the living room and waits at the junction where the foyer opens out into the rest of the house. She dashes toward the bedroom hallway. The figure pounces before her and she cowers back against a wall. She covers her face with her hands and peeks through her fingers, shaking her head.
This is a dream.
Are you? The figure stands. He has the body of a man with the head of a hairless rabbit and wears a crown of thorns. The girl stares, trembling and wide-eyed.
Touch me.
He takes her by the hand and prods one of her fingers into a slit-like wound along his ribs. He digs her finger deeper into his flesh. The girl looks away, grimacing. He lets go of her hand. His shoulders heaving, he looks down at her.
No child has ever seen me.
I won't tell anyone I saw you. I promise.
But now that you've seen me, now it is your turn. You must take my place.
Take your place.
You will see things few have ever seen. Magical things.
But what if I don't want to?
You have no choice.
Can I come back and see my mommy?
He leans in close.
Where you are going, you will never see your mommy ever, ever again.
He gazes at her through his large black eyes and holds out his right hand to her. The girl's lips tremble as she looks up fearfully at him. She places her hand in his palm, and he clasps his fingers around hers. He holds a small speckled egg in his other hand.
Now, close your eyes.
She obeys. He places the egg inside her mouth and lays his left hand over her head. A hole opens in the wound on the back of his hand, and the girl's closed eye is visible through it. His nose twitches. Her eye opens. The girl's shadow twitches and shudders across a wall. Two large rabbit ears pop out above her head. Now, the mother rushes out of her room and into the girl's bedroom doorway.
Honey?
She checks inside, then walks away.
Honey?
Outside, shadows sway across the patio floor.
Honey?
The switch on the patio door locks. Cut to black. A card featuring two bunnies holding hands reads, "Best Easter Wishes." Inside, the word "happy" disappears from the greeting, "Happy Easter." Written and directed by Nicholas McCarthy. Fade to black. Blurry gray shapes cross the dark areas of an abdominal sonogram. A small limb moves about the space, followed by a staring face. A pale young woman with straight blonde hair opens her eyes blearily and stares up at the ceiling.
You know, there are only a few days in any woman's cycle where she's capable of conceiving.
She nods.
And you're on generic high-dose progestin. Do you take it at the same time every day?
Mm-hmm.
You're sure?
He wears two condoms.
Hmm?
I ask him to wear two condoms, sometimes three.
She now sits at a kitchen table across from a bespectacled man with a mustache. He chews rapidly and shakes pepper onto his plate, while she listlessly picks at her food with a fork. Back at the clinic.
And you've terminated nearly 20 pregnancies?
I stopped counting. I'm sorry, it's okay. I've been to see so many doctors. My family won't talk to me.
She hangs her head.
My friends think I'm insane. Or making it up. I'm just...
She looks at the doctor with an expression of anguish.
It's like I'm cursed.
The doctor reaches over to the counter for a notepad.
I don't usually do this, but it does feel like you've exhausted all other options. I'm going to give you my sister's phone number. She volunteers at these weekend fertility ceremonies in the high desert. Maybe she can give you some sort of insight that the rest of us haven't been able to.
Thank you.
She smiles weakly.
It's probably not for me, but I appreciate it.
Kate, if what you've told me is true, then I don't think conventional medicine can help you.
Kate stares dully. Later, she drives along a lonely desert road, past a wide expanse of small hills dotted with bushes.
What happens at the ceremony?
Well, have you ever participated in a peyote ceremony? Or ayahuasca, or any kind of ceremonial medicine?
No.
It can be an intense experience. But if you're open to it, I think that you will really learn something.
Kate drives up to a desert cabin. The doctor's dark-haired sister shows Kate into a living room scattered with women.
I know I'm going to get pregnant this time.
I know it. Sometimes it takes many times to come here before you do.
I think you have to let go of the trying.
I get nervous sometimes.
Make yourself at home. The ceremony will start in an hour.
Kate sits on a couch and rolls her eyes at the ceiling. A woman leans over.
How old are you?
24.
What's the rush?
I'm actually not trying to have a baby right now.
Then what are you doing here?
I get pregnant every time I have sex.
The woman gives her a wry smile.
Sounds rough.
She gets up and walks away. Kate watches her go and exhales slowly. Evening light shines across a clay figure of a supine naked woman with her back arched. Later that night, the sister, Persian, and two other women stand with their arms held upwards, their faces painted. One by one, the guests disrobe and sip from a clay cup that Persian offers. Kate is among them. Later, the women sit in a shallow pool surrounded by candles. They each hold a small maraca, which they shake rhythmically. An older woman wearing a long headdress and dark streaks painted vertically across her eyes is disrobed and helped into the pool by Persian and the other two women. Kate eyes her tensely. The older woman swirls her arms around and raises them up above her head. She crouches towards one of the guests and whispers in her ear. Kate watches with a dazed expression. The older woman churns her arms through the water, whispers to another guest. Kate tenses as she sees the woman freeze, then creep towards her. The older woman inches closer to Kate's face and stares upwards with her mouth agape. Kate grows increasingly distressed and backs away from the woman, looking for a way out of the pool.
You
are a gateway.
I have to go home. No, I have to get out of here.
Persian and her two companions try to pacify Kate.
No, I don't want to be here.
It's just the medicine. Just trust it. It's just the medicine.
Kate's vision grows blurry and her eyelids droop as she glances around weakly.
Every time you end the life inside of you, it will come back stronger, 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 stronger.
Kate blacks out. Later, she lies on a cushioned bed and gazes foggily at the guests who dance around the cabin in various states of undress. The woman who approached Kate when she arrived sits beside a doorway, staring at her. Another woman moves her hand up and down around Kate. Images play in slow motion. Persian and the two women watch Kate intently and whisper among themselves. A topless woman flourishes her arms as she dances with beaded chains around her neck. A woman cries on a companion's shoulder. Candles flicker before a clay statue of a figure in a stone alcove. A delicate robe is draped over Kate's reclining figure, and a broad wreath is around her head. She stares blankly at a naked, heavy woman dancing sensually before her. Kate's drowsy eyes fall upon a muscular, bearded man sitting amidst the dancing women. He has broad, rippling shoulders and stares at Kate with dark, intense eyes.
Wait me.
Subtitles read, sleep, sleep little bird. When the time comes, do not resist. Do not say no. Overlapping, fading images show the man from below. Now, Persian and the two women recline on the bed around Kate, while the other guests are seated on the floor around them, gently swaying their bodies. One by one, the guests take their leave, and the three women drift away from Kate's side. Now, the man stands at the foot of the bed. Cut to black. Dazzling white light fills the screen, then filters through a window. A few bottles sit on the sill, their outlines faint amidst the bright sun. Lying in bed, Kate opens her eyes dully. Persian walks into the room and sits down on the edge of the bed. She strokes Kate's hair and smiles gently down at her.
Good morning, sleepyhead. You want a bath today?
Kate blinks up at her with a frown.
Yeah. Okay.
She places her hands under Kate's shoulders.
One, two, three, up.
She gently lifts her up into a sitting position. Later, Kate stares down at the curve of her nightgown over her large belly. She looks at her reflection in a mirror. Her head lolls to a side as she is bathed by a young woman.
You're gonna be such a good mama. You've been very patient.
Persian pours out a glass of milk while another woman combs Kate's hair. The third glances up at Kate as she finishes preparing a meal in the kitchen. She unscrews a drop bottle and measures out a few drops into the bowl. Several bottles and a bowl of syringes stand on the counter. Persian feeds Kate some porridge.
I think we need to increase her dose.
No, we can't give her more than 3 drops. It's not good for the baby.
The woman snaps her fingers in Kate's face.
Lily, she's fine.
Morning,
sister.
Kate's doctor arrives.
It's already getting so hot out there.
Yeah, it always heats up in May.
Happy Mother's Day, Mama.
She takes out a stethoscope and checks Kate's blood pressure.
Blood pressure's a little high. Has anybody tried calling her phone?
No, poor girl.
How's she been this week?
Not so good. I mean, we could use you around here more often.
Well, Kate weakly eyes her phone in her handbag. Her hand moves across the table towards the bowl.
It's really hard.
I am here every weekend. I'm going back and
forth. Yeah, well, I think you should stay with her from here on out. It's the last month.
I can't take a whole month off of work, Lily.
God damn it, you idiot! Don't yell at her. No wonder she has high blood pressure living here with you guys.
She can't hear us anyways.
Outside, rocky hills dot the horizon. Cacti and dry shrubs fill up the barren landscape.
Okay.
Persian sits Kate down in a chair in the backyard.
Classical or contemporary today? I'm feeling contemporary.
Kate tugs a woolen throw close to her chest and gives Persian a mistrustful sidelong glance as she walks away. She looks down into the folds of the fabric. Persian goes to a record player. Kate clutches the throw as she waits for Persian to leave, then takes out her phone and starts to dial.
911, what's your emergency?
My name is Kate Paulson. I've been kidnapped. I need help.
Fire, ambulance, or police?
Police, please. Or please hurry.
What's the address?
Oh, it's a house, 10 miles north of the highway.
Lily clamps a hand over Kate's mouth. Kate shoves her arm away, elbows her in the stomach, and begins to slowly run away. Lily throws a look back at Kate's doctor, then follows. Lily grabs Kate's arm.
Be careful!
Careful!
Kate pulls away and falls to the ground. The other women approach.
That was stupid! Look what you did!
What's happening?
She's going to labor! That's what's happening!
God.
Okay. Just breathe. Just breathe.
The more you accept it, the easier it'll be.
Kate lies on her back with her knees apart.
Okay. Come on, just push. Push for me.
The doctor kneels before Kate, supporting her legs.
Good girl.
A large bird circles high above, holding something in its claws. The earth trembles. A bloody arm shoots out from between Kate's legs and grabs her knee. Cut to black. A cat in a cradle adorns the cover of a greeting card depicting the various developmental stages of a human embryo. Dearest Mother. The card opens to show the message, Happy Mother's Day, and the word happy fades away. Written and directed by Sarah Adina Smith. Fade to black. The moon revolves around the earth. A pretty young brunette drives down a highway leading out of a city, her features blank. Later, she opens the trunk of a red car parked in front of a house and takes out a cardboard box. She hoists the box onto one arm and shuts the trunk, then unlatches a low front gate and walks up the short path to the house. She pauses as she gets to her front door. A brown paper and string-bound package with a neat typed label sits on her front step. Later.
Probably not. Yeah, I'm gonna be here grading these papers all weekend.
She preps food in her kitchen.
Yeah, I know. It's 52 this year.
Later, she sits at her table with a bowl of food, watching a video on her laptop. The cardboard box and the package sit on the table in front of her. Her eyes wander from her screen to the package. Outside, a figure watches her house. The woman cuts the string off the package and tears away the wrapping. She straightens when she sees another typed label on the inside that reads, Happy Father's Day. She pauses a moment, then slowly lifts the flap of a plain cardboard box. Inside is an old tape recorder with a cassette tape in the deck. She takes it out and presses the eject button. The plain white tape has A written on one side and B on the other. She puts the tape back in and picks up a pair of metal headphones, then slips them over her head and presses play. She looks down and notices the tape isn't playing. She turns the recorder around, then goes through a drawer in her kitchen. She puts batteries into it. She presses play, and the spools begin to turn.
Hi, Carol. It's me. Your daddy.
Her lips part in shock.
I'm so sorry. Daddy had to leave you. I never loved anything more than you. You are my miracle. I wanted so badly for you to come with me. For us to be together.
Her eyes fill with tears and her chin trembles.
Your mother and I, we just didn't see things the same way. It's so important that you know it wasn't your fault. And that you know that I am so, so sorry I wasn't there for you.
She presses stop, takes off the headphones, and gets up from the table. A little later, she smokes a cigarette on her porch.
If you're hearing this message, I can't imagine the pain that I've caused you.
She looks through an album.
But it's not too late for us to be together. I left this message in trust with good people. I told them to give this to you when you were old enough, strong enough.
She holds a picture of her father.
I didn't want to leave you there all alone. It wasn't my choice. So, if you want to see me, to find me, continue where we left off. I can be there for you now, if you're ready. Just go to where we played that day. Our last day together. Go there. Turn the tape over. Press play. And I will guide you. You will always be my baby, no matter what you choose. I just hope you'll have it in you to forgive me. Remember, Daddy loves you forever, Carol.
The tape stops. Later, Carol talks on the phone.
This isn't fair. It's not fucking fair. How could you do this to me, Mom? All these years, he was alive? I miss him so much.
She leans against her hallway wall.
You fucking call me back the minute you get this. Bitch.
She slides down and sits on the floor, covering her face with her hand. The moon continues to make its way around the earth. Carol lies awake in bed in her darkened room, then quickly gets up. Later, she drives down an empty road blanketed in darkness, where only her taillights are visible. She continues down the highway as the sun comes up. A little later, the sun shines brightly overhead as she pulls to a stop at an empty beach. She turns off the engine and gets out. Her phone sits on the passenger's seat. Carol takes the tape recorder out of her trunk and walks forward. She comes over a rise and looks at the expanse of blue water ahead of her. Concrete boulders lay haphazardly on the beach and in the water. Carol walks down the sandy slope and looks around, clutching the recorder. She takes the tape out of the recorder and turns it around to the B-side. She slips the headphones over her ears, the wind whipping her hair back from her face. Then, she presses play.
Carol, come on, baby, it's time to go.
5 more minutes?
Okay, 5 more minutes, then we have to go.
Okay.
Her gaze wanders over the water.
Hello, Carol. I hope that you've come and are ready to see me again. Listen carefully, and I'll help you find me.
I'm ready, Daddy.
Yeah? Okay, you got your backpack?
Yeah.
Hey, let's go this way today, okay?
Where are we going?
First, we're going towards the exit. Then we are headed south on Revel Avenue.
South? Where's south?
It's this way. Come, let's hold hands while crossing.
Carol begins to walk away from the shore, then passes abandoned shacks.
How come you're carrying that?
I'm making a message for a friend.
Do I know them?
Yes, honey. You know them. Turn right on 3rd.
What's it say?
just where to find us.
Why?
Because they need help.
Sand gives way to cracked concrete roads.
Look at this, Dad!
Wow, that's a good-looking stick.
It looks like a magic wand.
It does look magic.
She looks at a fence on the side of the road, then closes her eyes.
How much further?
We're almost there. A left at Marmont coming up. I promise this will all make sense in the end.
She stops at a crossroad.
Walk to 433 Marmont.
Carol turns onto another street.
You know that I love you very much, right?
I love you too, Daddy.
And that I only want what is best for us. That's why I picked you up today, honey. Daddy has to go somewhere, and I needed to see you before I left.
Where are you going?
I'm going to a very special place. But don't worry, you'll come and visit me soon. Always remember this, Carol. The person who risks nothing has nothing.
She mouths along.
Is nothing. And becomes nothing.
I don't want you to go.
I know. But I have to. We're here.
She sees a large building.
The front door should be open.
Pillars support the portico around the building.
You'll come see me as soon as you're ready.
I'm ready.
I wish you were.
She walks towards the entrance.
But I'll miss you.
I'll miss you more than you'll ever know.
She stops a few feet short of an open doorway.
Come, we have to go inside. And let Daddy carry you.
She stands at the threshold, silhouetted against the dim evening light outside. She turns to look over her shoulder, and a figure runs across the inside of the entryway.
Why'd you have to go?
Carol steps into the darkness.
Be strong for Daddy. We're almost together again.
Dust covers the floor and walls.
You are so close now.
Wallpaper peels from the ceiling.
What's that picture?
It's called an icon. It's a symbol of faith.
She turns a corner to see a closed door.
Okay, honey. Will you sit here and wait for Daddy? I have to go and talk to that nice lady over there.
You're not going yet, are you?
Not yet. I just need to talk to the lady.
Promise?
I promise.
Okay.
You are such a strong girl, and I am so proud of you.
She looks around at the debris cluttered against the walls. Another door stands near the first. Carol closes her eyes as she remembers.
I'm here for my appointment. To speak with him.
She looks to the side, tears spilling from her eyes. Her gaze moves back to the doors. Her eyes flicker back to the other end of the room.
Dad! 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 Dad!
I'm sorry.
Daddy! Daddy!
She starts to walk towards the second door.
It wasn't my choice, Carol. You only get one chance to meet him. To visit this place. That's why I made this for you. And I pray that it found you so that you may find me.
She reaches for the cobweb-covered doorknob. The moon begins to align with the earth. Carol walks onto a broken-down terrace, the full moon shining brightly in the distance.
I'll be so happy to see you again.
She moves past the broken bits of wood. In her car, Carol's phone buzzes with her mother's call. On the terrace, she walks towards an open doorway. She cries as she peers at a figure sitting in a high-backed chair.
Daddy!
Hello, baby. I'm here for you. I'm so happy that you came.
Dad!
She steps over a white line. A bald creature turns to her, mouth opening. Light flashes, and everything turns black. The tape recorder falls to the ground in slow motion, broken headphones along with it.
Together.
The chair sits unoccupied on the now empty terrace. The door Carol went through is shut again. Darkness shrouds the pillared building. A card with a smiling moon shining over a father sitting with two children. To my dear father. On the inside, a picture of a man in an easy chair. Happy Father's Day. The word happy disappears. Written and directed by Anthony Scott Burns. Fade to black. Halloween masks hang on a convenience store display rack.
Hi, is this Shelby? Yeah, you responded to my ad online. My name's Ian. How are you?
Ian has long braids.
Where are you from, by the way? Des Moines. Oh, fuck. You probably want to get out of there so badly. Yeah, so come to LA. No, it's not porn. It's webcam. It's honestly exactly like FaceTime. You probably already do the same shit with your boyfriends. Except now, you can get paid while you do it. Large. Last week, one of the girls made $8,000. How's it sound to you?
He grabs discount candy.
Good? Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I'm super excited about that. Okay, so we'll get everything squared away immediately.
In a car.
Hi, is this Allison? Yeah, you responded to my ad online. Yeah, the webcam stuff. No. It's nothing like porno. It's nothing like porno at all. It's on your webcam. It's pretty much FaceTime. I mean, you probably already do the same thing with your boyfriends. Yeah, it includes a free ticket to the heart of Hollywood. You'll be set up, staying in a beautiful apartment. What do you tell your parents? I don't know. Fuck your parents.
Two blonde girls sit on a couch and watch a cartoon. One of them digs into the back of a small oven.
A witch's power is strongest in threes.
Like, what the fuck are these bitches cooking, man?
They're not cooking. That's a cauldron. They're actually casting spells.
Another blonde girl enters dressed in a German milkmaid costume.
She's not a fucking asshole.
What happened?
She poses seductively in front of a screen.
He was writing all the shit that he wanted to do to me, and then when he signed off...
A chat message. You're a pig, you fucking whore.
He called me a whore.
Oh, Serenes. I'm so sorry. Man, what a fucking fuckhole, man.
You got his credit card number, right?
She nods.
So fuck this asshole. Let's go shopping.
Ian enters.
I'm gonna email you a ticket right away, Allison. Your boyfriend? Ah, fuck him. Now you're gonna be treated like a queen here. I promise.
He turns off the TV.
Okay. Bye now.
His smile disappears. His t-shirt reads, Haver of Pussy.
The fuck is this? Nobody's working?
Nobody's calling.
It's Halloween. Everyone's out partying.
Except us.
Oh, that's sad. Trick or treat, skank.
He tosses the bag of candy at Serena, then walks into the kitchen. The women keep their gazes lowered.
Did you scrape that shit out yet? I want to eat my Hot Pockets.
Can I have one of your Hot Pockets?
I gave you your dinner.
Fuck your $3 for $1 discount shit. What's wrong with name brand candy? Ever heard of Hershey's?
Yeah, I heard of Hershey. Hershey's, is what my grandmother used to say, is for ladies. I added this part. Discount stuff is for whores.
Whores?
What is wrong with this girl?
Some cam asshole called her a whore and then signed off.
They're supposed to type dirty shit. That's why they give us their money.
Okay, well, nobody's giving us their money tonight.
Yeah, so why don't you give us the night off so we can cheer Serena up and celebrate Halloween?
He looks at the girls' pleading faces and nods.
Okay.
The first two girls beam.
Oh, no, wait. I meant to say fuck no!
Don't be a dick, Ian.
No, fuck you, Holly. I'm sick of your shit. I'm sick of all of your shits, okay? I just got off the phone with two. Count them. Two cam girls.
Oh, yeah. They want to come to Hollywood and work for me. So, ABC. Always be camming, bitches. Because the next generation's coming, and they're going to replace you. Just like you replace the whores before you.
Stop saying whores!
No, I'll say whores if I want to say whores! I'll say whores if I want! Now you got me irritated.
He walks around the couch and stands in front of the TV.
And since it's such a slow night, why don't I put one of you sluts to work? How's that sound? So who's it gonna be? One of you girls is gonna show me your pussy.
Ian rubs the front of his pants.
No.
Holly stands.
We're not girls, Ian. We're women. I was a girl when I got here, but after working for you for 8 fucking months, now I'm sad to say I'm a woman. I'm the oldest 18-year-old woman I know. All because I made a big mistake in coming here. But you know what? The more I think about it, the more I realize I'm not the only one that made the mistake, Ian. You made a big mistake. Wanna know why? Because you put 3 women in a room together. Do you know what 3 women in a room together used to be called? A coven. You got that? Witches.
She sits.
And the power of witches is always strongest in 3s. You fuck.
Oh. Witches now. Witches. Okay. Well, which is gonna ride this broomstick?
He gestures at his crotch. They stare at him apprehensively.
Yeah. This one.
No.
Yes.
No.
He yanks Serena off the couch.
I don't wanna!
Well, you're gonna!
Ian falls. Holly stands behind him, clutching the oven. Later, Ian lies on his front, naked except for a pair of dirty white briefs. A black cable runs over the back of his thigh and into his underwear. Pillows and a stuffed animal lie around him. He touches the back of his head. He tries sitting and winces.
What the fuck?
He stands and grabs the cable.
What the fuck?
His muscles clench and he falls to his knees on the bed. He rolls around in pain. Messages pop up on the webcam screen, and Ian crawls toward the computer for a better look. You feel that, Ian? We stuck a vibrator up your ass and super glued your asshole shut, and hooked the vibrator up to a car battery.
What the fuck?
A wide smiley face emoji, then, smelly work, but it was worth it, so we can do this. Ian shudders and falls back on the bed as his eyes roll back. A laughing face emoji comes up on screen. His features contort, and he closes his eyes.
What the fuck?
If you try to pull it out again, we'll crank it up higher, like this.
Okay!
Now, he leans back up to look at the screen, his braided hair in disarray.
Oh. What the fuck do you want?
Show us your pussy.
What? What the fuck?
Show us your pussy now. Ian convulses violently and a blush face emoji appears on screen.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Okay.
He struggles to straighten, the screen obscuring his crotch. He yanks down the front of his underwear.
There. You made your point. Take your fucking pictures.
He pulls it up and his hairy belly wobbles from the effort. Show us your pussy, Ian, followed by a devil's face. Ian covers his face with his hands.
What the fuck? I don't have a pussy!
He looks away from the camera as he yells. A message appears. So make one. And a knife is slid under the door. Ian jumps. Multiple laughing emojis pop up on screen.
Are you fucking bitches fucked in the head? What the fuck is wrong with you? This is fucking insane!
Do it, BB. Show us your pussy. He convulses and falls back on the bed and clutches at the stained sheets. How about this? Show us your pussy or we turn it up. You've been at one. This is a two. He holds his hands over his face and rolls over the sheets in pain. Okay, Ian, that was just a two of a possible 10. So, you know, show us your pussy, Ian.
Please don't make me do this, please.
Use the knife.
I'll pay you. I'll fucking pay you, please.
His muscles tense up and he shudders.
Oh, fuck. Okay, okay.
Then show us your pussy.
Okay.
Do it or die, Ian.
This is fucked up! This is fucked!
Spittle froths around his mouth. He picks up the knife. Good. Now... Ian looks at the screen, deep furrows in his brow. Make it hollow, Ian.
Fuck you.
LOL pops up on screen. Ian leans back against the wall, then rubs a hand over his face. A message with a mocking pained face emoji.
Fuck you! Fuck you, bitches!
LOL. Ian closes his eyes. Blood spurts onto his face and the wall. Meanwhile, a turnover is split open, revealing red sauce inside.
What the fuck are you crying about? Look at all that blood.
This is getting boring. What happens if we turn the shit up to 10?
Serene and Holly's eyes widen.
That?
The girls look up sharply. They open their door to find a pretty dark-haired young girl with a suitcase.
Hi, is he in here? He flew me out from Maine to work.
They stare at her.
I'm Nancy.
Holly looks at her friends, nods, then smiles.
Hello, Nancy. Welcome. You're joining us during a period of transition for the company. As of today, we're actually under new management.
Oh. Well, what happened to Ian?
Unfortunately, Ian is no longer with the company due to, cutbacks.
Serena laughs, and the two others smile. A card with a witch carrying a cat and a pumpkin. Halloween wishes. On the inside, a picture of a black cat. Happy Halloween. The word happy disappears. Written and directed by Kevin Smith. Fade to black. A commercial plays.
UView. Your imagination come to life.
Pictures of people engaged in outdoor activities.
UView shows you, you.
Cut to black. A man bangs his fist on the door to a toy store. Inside.
Here you go.
Thank you.
The kids are gonna love that.
Yes, the kids are definitely gonna love it.
Wait till you put it on your head.
I'll leave that to the kids.
All right. Hope they enjoy it. Yeah, Merry Christmas.
You. Merry Christmas.
Good night. Hi.
I'm sorry, we're closed.
Oh, no. I called about the UView.
That guy got the last one.
What? No, I called. I'm Pete Gunderson. I said I was coming.
First come, first served. Sorry, pal. Holidays are hell.
The clerk shuts and locks the door. Pete turns to see the suited customer on his cell, walking away.
Yeah, honey. Got the last one? Okay. I'll be home
with you. Excuse me. I love you. Excuse me, sir. Hi. Look, I'll give you $300 for it.
Not a chance, pal. Try eBay.
Wait, please. I'll give you...
He checks his wallet.
I'll give you $500. Please, it's Christmas Eve. I'm out of time.
Yeah, listen, if it was really that important, you would have gotten here earlier. Merry Christmas.
Fuck! Oh, fuck!
Pete checks his phone. A text from Sarah reads, "Did you get it?" He shuts his eyes and shakes his head. He opens his eyes to see the customer twitching on the ground beside his car.
Oh my god.
The man reaches for a fallen pill bottle nearby.
I'll call.
Another text reads, "Please tell me you got it." Pete looks up and sees the UView box sitting on the passenger seat of the man's car. Pete looks from the man back to the box. He steps across the fallen man, takes the box, and steps back, stepping on several pills as he goes. The man's eyes grow unfocused. Later, Pete is at his home, staring at the wrapped U-View.
I finally had it, and I told Ed he was full of shit. I mean, I deserve that Christmas bonus a hell of a lot more than that do-nothing, kiss-ass nephew of his. I swear I could kill him, Scrooge.
What?
He turns to Sarah.
Have you not been listening to me? Ed didn't give me the Christmas bonus that we were counting on. And with you making less money now, God, I'm at the end of my rope. How much was this thing anyway? I hope you didn't overspend.
Later that night, Pete lies awake in bed, fidgeting restlessly with his fingers. Scenes of him stealing the U-View flash back to him. He turns to Sarah, puts a hand on her shoulder and moves closer, kissing her neck.
Stop.
Come on.
No.
She swats him away. He frowns at her, then flops back onto his pillow. He lifts the sheets and glances underneath them morosely. Daytime. A young boy holds up the goggles and grins at Pete.
I still can't believe you got it, Dad.
Sarah smiles at Pete.
So you just watch stuff on him?
Yeah, it aggregates your online identity to figure out what to show you.
He puts them on and sees an expanse of dry, rocky land stretched out before him.
Congratulations, Captain. You're the first person to walk on Mars.
You gotta try it, Dad.
He hands the goggles to Pete.
Am I gonna see what you saw?
No, it's different for everyone.
Pete puts them on. From his POV, he spanks a nearly naked woman.
Thank you, Daddy!
He takes them off.
It's totally cool, right?
Right. Yeah, totally. Wow.
He swallows.
Is this the off button?
That night, he looks over at Sarah as she sleeps on her side, facing away from him. He cautiously sneaks out of bed. Standing in the bedroom hallway, Pete sees the U-View on his son's bedside table. Later, he is seated in a bathroom, holding the U-View in his hands. He taps a button on the side. He slips them on. The submissive woman crawls towards him on her hands and knees.
Please don't punish me, Daddy. I promise I won't be naughty anymore.
She lowers her head between his legs. Pete shudders. The image flickers and changes to the POV of the dying man reaching for his pills. Pete approaches. The image skips to Pete holding the box as he steps across the man's field of vision. Now he takes the goggles off.
Fuck.
He puts them back on to see the indifferent faces of two medical examiners.
Heart attack, huh?
Yeah. Probably would have made it too if he got help in time.
Hell of a Christmas gift for his family.
Fucking Christmas.
I hear ya, bro. Okay, bag him up. We need the fridge space.
Later, Pete is on the phone in his office.
Hi, it says on your website that less than 1% of users may experience an adverse reaction when using the device. And I was just wondering, what type of adverse reactions are users experiencing? Exactly.
Are you having trouble with your device, sir?
Pete has another flashback.
I'm just wondering.
Well, if you'd like to give me your name and login, I can check your video feed to see if there's anything abnormal going on.
You can do that? That's fine. That's not necessary. Thank you very much.
Pete raises a hand to his mouth. Now, he arrives home. He takes off his jacket and scarf and sees Sarah standing by the windows, facing the drawn curtains.
Sarah? Where's Bobby?
I sent him to stay with a friend. You forgot to log out, Pete.
She turns to him, holding up the U-View. Pete gapes.
I don't know what that showed you, but...
Everything. I saw everything. I just want to know one thing.
Why'd you do it?
Pete looks away, and a crease forms on his brow. He shrugs forlornly.
Because he had what I wanted. And I was tired of being nice.
Sarah stares at him.
Oh, Pete. That is the hottest thing you have ever said.
She runs forward and kisses Pete. She pulls him with her to the floor, and they continue kissing passionately. The UView lies forgotten on the carpet nearby. The next morning, Pete wakes up in an empty bed. He strokes Sarah's pillow, smiling fondly. His smile quickly fades when he sees the UView goggles on her bedside table. He gets out from under the covers and picks them up, frowning. He puts them on. At an office desk, a POV is focused on a filed document.
Hey, everyone's gone. I'm gonna go ahead and lock up.
Sarah walks into the office wearing a Santa hat and holding a mug which reads, World's Greatest Boss. She sets it down on the desk.
And I made this just the way you like it.
The boss's hand reaches for the mug. The image skips ahead.
Oh, Ed, you don't look so good.
Ed's POV, he has moved to the trunk of Sarah's car.
I hope you're not afraid of the dark, Ed. Should have given me that bonus, Ed.
Now, in a garage, Sarah is in a plastic poncho and rubber gloves. She holds a glass of wine and turns on some music. She takes a sip, sets down the glass, and picks up an electric knife.
This is what happens to Scrooges like you.
She moves in with the blade towards Ed.
Ain't the holidays hell?
Her poncho gets sprayed with blood. Pete takes off the goggles. His eyes are wide with shock. He blinks down at the device and turns it to read the text on its side. UView shows you you.
Pete, you awake?
Pete turns to the door. Cut to black. A greeting card depicts Santa Claus holding a doll. It reads, Remember, he is watching. Inside is a close-up image of an eye. The Mary in Merry Christmas disappears, written and directed by Scott Stewart. Fade to black. The cover of a photo album reads, Sweet Memories. A man flips through the pages of photographs of a curly-haired woman along with handwritten captions for different holidays.
I didn't want to have to do this. You know, I kept pushing it off. I didn't want to ruin another holiday.
She looks distressed in some of the pictures.
I want to pretend like everything was okay.
He lowers the album.
But you.
The woman is gagged and tied to a chair, wearing a pair of fake antlers.
I mean, I thought that when you got to know me, you know, when you saw the real me, that you'd... Ah, never mind.
She cowers away from him.
Tonight at midnight, I want to kiss someone who makes me feel like I can take the tape off their lips.
He holds a gun to her head. He frowns down at the gun.
Damn it.
He storms off. The woman struggles against her restraints, her wrists and ankles bound to the arms and legs of the chair with pieces of thick cord. The man returns with a single bullet, which he places into the chamber of the revolver.
Sorry about that. Let me try that again.
He aims at her head and pulls the trigger. He scowls.
Jesus Christ!
He squats down to examine the gun. He looks up at the terrified woman with a compassionate smile.
Mandy.
Mandy.
She hesitantly makes eye contact. A Santa hat on a Christmas tree is splattered with blood. Now a young woman sits cross-legged on a couch with a bowl of ice cream and fruit, unhappily eating. An open laptop and a mug sit on the couch beside her. She clicks open a notification, and a man's profile pops up on perfectmatch.com. The name reads, Reggie F. It's the man who killed Mandy. A section titled, Myself, Summary, reads, Just trying to make it work.
Can't be worse than the last one.
Later, they are together at a restaurant. Reggie sips a milkshake and watches the woman with distaste as she eats with her hands.
How is it?
They're great. They're the best chicken fingers. they brought them with Frosted Flakes.
She beams at him.
My mom didn't let me eat sugary cereal. You know, rot your teeth.
My teeth aren't rotten.
You must brush a lot. Do you brush a lot?
I don't know. I guess so.
Let me see them.
What?
Let me see those pearly whites. I bet they sparkle.
She squeezes her eyes shut and bares her teeth at him.
Yeah, I knew it. Great teeth.
He gestures uncomfortably at his own rotten teeth. She averts her eyes.
That was. I'm sorry. It's just the nerves. That's the problem with these first dates, you know. You know, people got to know the real me. You know, they would love me. But, you know, they never get to meet me. You know, it's just... because the nerve monster just rears its ugly head.
She takes off her party hat.
Those guys I date online just want to hook up. One and done. They act like I'm crazy for wanting something more lasting.
Right? You know, people say that those dating websites are bullshit, but I mean, 96%? I mean, like, that's an all-time high for me. I mean, my last girlfriend was like an 84%. And, you know, yeah, no surprise that didn't turn out.
What happened?
I had to end it.
He purses his lips.
It was for the best.
She sips her drink and gives him a noncommittal nod. He presses two fingers to his throat.
Buh. Sorry. You are so much hotter than she was.
She looks down at the table.
I mean, prettier.
Should we get the check?
She eyes him with a wince. He grimaces, pouts, then lowers his mouth to the straw in his milkshake. He raises a hand at the waiter, and she fidgets. He keeps his gaze downcast and takes another sip.
I'm sorry.
For what?
For calling you hot.
Liquid dribbles down his chin.
Why would you apologize for that?
Because it made me sound all pervy, like I was trying to hook up with you. You know, and I know you don't like that on a first date.
She eyes him awkwardly and shrugs.
It's New Year's Eve. To be the most unromantic gal in the world to want to go home to a lonely apartment.
He gives her a serious look and nods.
Yep.
She gazes into his eyes.
Do you want to go back to my place and watch the ball drop?
A bottle is uncorked and a stream of frothy champagne shoots out. Later, they are in her living room watching TV. He turns to look at her. He lets his gaze wander across her features, narrowing his eyes slightly. He steps closer.
Can I take your jacket?
She removes his jacket and takes it to a coat rack as he eyes her. She returns and they stand facing each other awkwardly. She reaches out and grabs his crotch. He backs away.
Oh, whoa.
Should I not?
No, it's just, I need to use the restroom. Yeah, I want to freshen up.
Okay, great idea. Down the hall to the right.
She turns out a string of lights along the walls, leaving a lamp glowing in a corner. She goes back to the couch and begins to undress. In the bathroom, Reggie takes out a handkerchief from a pocket and neatly lays it open along the edge of the sink. From another pocket, he pulls out a bottle of chloroform and unscrews it. He pauses, cocking his head at a small table of toiletries. He picks up a bottle of perfume and holds the nozzle to his nose. His eyes fall upon a shower curtain printed with flowering branches. He replaces the bottle and smiles to himself. He picks up her toothbrush, holds it delicately between his fingers, then sniffs it. He dabs it at a few of his teeth, then scrapes the bristles along the length of his tongue. He looks at his reflection as he sucks on the toothbrush, then opens the medicine cabinet. Various body parts are preserved in labeled jars of liquid. An empty jar has Reggie's name on it. He recoils, dropping the toothbrush and chloroform, which pours out into the sink. He leans with his back against the door, feeling his pockets. Back in the living room, the butt of his revolver peeks out of a jacket pocket. Panicked, he glances around the bathroom. He goes to the shower and pushes back the curtain. Body parts hang from the curtain rod, and a bloody corpse wrapped in plastic lies in the tub. Reggie rushes back to the sink and vomits. The woman barges in, clad in a plastic jumpsuit and carrying a large axe. She swings it at Reggie, who dives away and topples into the bathtub. He kicks her backwards. She crashes into the medicine cabinet and falls to the floor. He tries to crawl out, but she gets up and chops at his ankle. She steps on his foot, which gets left behind in his shoe as he wriggles free. He grabs a chunk of the broken sink and flings it at her head. She falls back and he crawls away. She reaches for the axe and gets up with a cold, menacing glare. Reggie reaches the front door and tugs at the padlock across it with all his might. He hurries to his jacket and grabs the gun just as she pounces on him. They crash down through a coffee table, grappling at each other's faces. He breaks free, grabs his gun, and points it at her. He pulls the trigger. She sinks the blade into Reggie's skull. An explosion of lights on the TV reads, "Happy New Year."
Feliz año nuevo, cariño.
She looks at him with a wide-eyed, manic grin and heaves the axe out of Reggie, who topples to the floor. She holds the axe lovingly and begins to slow dance with it, her long, dark hair swaying as she spins beneath a banner reading, "Happy New Year." Cut to black. On the front of a card, a dancing figure stands on point on the mouth of a champagne bottle. Inside is the image of a figure impaled with swords and sticks. Below reads, "Happy New Year's." The word "happy" fades out. Directed by Adam Egypt Mortimer. Written by Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer. Fade to black.
Going back home today. Yes, I'm going back home. Going back home today. The sun goes down, maybe I'll be on my way. I haven't had no fun, had no loving at all. Ooh, I haven't had no fun, had no loving at all. Yes, when I get home, me and my baby sugar play. My train to come. Yes, I've got my ticket, waiting for my train to come. When my train comes in, you can bet I'm gonna hop right aboard.
XYZ Films, Distant Corners Entertainment, Holidays, copyright Holidays Production, LLC 2015. Happy Holidays.